Welcome to Joy in Learning, a podcast from the Harley School in Rochester, New York. We are an independent school for nursery through grade 12, where there's always lots of interesting learning going on for us to share with you. Today I sat down with Elizabeth and Eric from the band Pocket Vinyl during their visit here at Harley. I am here with Pocket Vinyl. They are Elizabeth and Eric. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So before we start talking about history and things, you guys are sort of a different, you're a unique band. You're not what folks would expect when they come to see a show. What should folks expect if they come to see you?
Well, our act is Eric plays original music and sings original songs. And then I actually do live art during the show. And so it's kind of a more multimedia type of a event than most other bands, I guess.
Yeah. It's I play a piano and I like to scream and hit the piano very hard. Every band makes up their own genre these days, and ours is piano slam rock.
We like to say that we're constantly competing with each other for your attention.
Yeah.
So Eric is jumping around trying to get you to look at him, and I'm painting trying to get you to look at me.
Yeah, because your eyes naturally will go to Elizabeth and what she's doing, and then I basically am just next to her trying to wave my hands and scream and try to be like, no, pay attention to me. And from what audiences have told us, it seems like it makes 45 minutes to an hour go by very fast that way.
that leads me to a perfect question about your history. How did you wind up here? I mean, I can see that sort of...
here as in like what the band is?
Well, how did you evolve from... did you just know each other and said, hey, let's do this thing?
That's or is it a thing that... Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. I did a little bit of live painting in college. Just for different events and stuff. And then we started dating and he was going to go on tour. And I said, I should come along and just give it a shot. And we did it for a summer and it worked out really well. And so then we decided to quit our jobs and do it full time.
Yeah, we had known one of our favorite bands. There's a band out of Minneapolis called Cloud Cult. And they had a full band and two painters. And so there was like an example that we were sort of following of like, oh, well, it's possible. And yeah, they auctioned off the paintings afterwards, which is also what we do. And we just wanted to hang out with each other more. Yeah. And we're, you know, in the throes of when you really like someone, but it's like the early stages before love.
Infatuation.
Yeah, that's it. We're very infatuated with each other. Yeah, and I remember that first summer too. We actually, it wasn't much, but we made money.
Yeah,
which
we found out later from other bands that most bands don't make money on tour.
No,
no one told us that you couldn't, and so we did. You know,
yeah. We both have pretty like saver mindset. Like we're not big spenders, and we know how to like rough it and enjoy that. But
yeah,
it was one of those things where it was like, you know, it's not how it's done, but no one told us no. And so we just kind of did it. And then later everyone's like, well, that's not how it's done. And it's like, okay, well, it worked for us. So
that's a very Harley attitude. I love it. And so you were going to go on tour on your own.
Yeah, we actually, we started dating. We were in South Korea teaching English after college. It was, long story short, we were there. And I had saved up some money and I was finishing my time and it was ending in May, and so I was booking a bunch of shows, and I just had never toured before and always kind of wanted to see if I could pursue a career in music. And I was just gonna go by myself, which thank goodness I didn't, because at the end of that summer, actually, you had a teaching job, mm-hmm, that you had to leave, and we still had 2 weeks of shows, and I did them by myself, and it was horrible. I hated being on tour by myself. But when it was the two of us, it was great. It was just us versus the world type of thing.
Yeah, you have a bad show, but at least there's someone there to notice that it's bad and laugh about it.
Oh, yeah. And I, like, man, every time I hear, like, stand-up comedians talk about that, or, like solo performers, it just failing or succeeding seem worse by yourself. It's so much more fun to do it with someone else. Mm-hmm. And, we had no idea what we were doing, just going around painting stuff, and people seemed to like it, and, you know, 13, 14 years later, we're still just doing it at roughly the same level, but now we have a thin but spread out fan base across the United States. where we could almost play anywhere in the States and 1 to 5 people will show up super excited.
And where are you both originally from?
Originally, I'm from Northern Quebec.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. Yeah, so I grew up like way up, tiny little town of 2,000 people, native reservation, middle of nowhere.
It's on most globes.
It is on most globes because there's nothing around it. The town is called Shefferville. And then Eric is from this area.
Yeah, I actually grew up about an hour south of here at a small town called Houghton.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, my parents were professors there, and I grew up in the town, like one of about 2,000 people.
Okay.
But, I mean, we both kind of...
Both from small towns in very different spaces.
Right. And so, but there's a... I don't know. I'd like to think there's a connection there, kind of. But yeah, anyway, Western New York feels very home to me. Even like we actually were staying with my parents and we drove up this morning, and it's just a very familiar drive to me coming to Rochester, like from the South. And yeah, I like it.
Right on. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, I saw on your tour dates that you're doing quite a bit in the area.
Yeah, this whole week is kind of a Western New York run.
Hitting a bunch of libraries around the area. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, libraries, got a house show. No. Yeah, museum in Binghamton.
That's pretty great. So you hold... A record,
a world record.
And see, I have so many questions. So, how did the record come about? Like, how did you hear that this was a thing that you wanted to do?
I think Eric just looked it up one day. He's just like, I wonder what the record is for. So, the record is playing a show in every state in the fastest amount of time. So, all 50 states. What's the record? What's the fastest?
One show every single state.
A band has done it. And
I saw a band attempting to do it. And that's how you saw it.
And so he just looked it up and it was 50 states, 50 shows, 50 days.
That was the
current record.
Okay. Real quick. How, what does that sound like to you?
That sounds awful.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds cool, but that sounds like a lot, especially for a band.
So you're like, wow, 50 days, 50 shows. That's impressive.
That
right?
does sound like a lot to me. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's not our mindset.
My thought, which was Elizabeth's thought, which from people we've talked to, we're the only two people who thought this, which makes why we're a good pair, is like, I mean, I was like thinking.
So he saw that and he turned to me and without saying anything, he just said, what do you think of this? And my response was, oh, that sounds really easy. I think we could beat that. No problem.
And I was like, right, we could beat that. Like we were both just like, yeah, 50 days, that's so beatable.
Well, because we've also done multiple shows. Like we'll do an afternoon show and then an evening show. So we know that is possible for us.
We probably had 800 shows under our belt at that time.
Yeah.
Right now we're around 1,100.
It was. Wow. It did turn out to be, you know, one of the most strenuous things we'd ever attempted.
Absolutely.
But yeah, thinking about it, we're just like, it seemed easy.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of like world records. Like, you know, the other music world records, like, you know, if like the longest concert, I think is now like, it's like days long, you know, like things that just seem like I'm never even going to try to do that. But given our experience, given what we do, we had done multiple shows in multiple states in multiple days before. Mm-hmm. I can think of one time where I remember we played in like Hartford, Connecticut at like 6 and then had like a Worcester show, which is, you know, like an hour away, but still in another state at like 11 or something. And so it didn't. And from the Northeast, where states are so small, it just, you know, maybe if we grew up out West, we would have had different thoughts about it. But we're like, we could do that. And it just, it seemed like, yeah, why not? Also, you know, cards on the table as a small band with, like, we don't have any record label, no booking agents or anything. You always have to keep it fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think for us, when we saw that, we're just like, oh, this sounds fun. This sounds like a fun activity to attempt.
Yeah.
And
even
I think
if we fail.
Both of us, like, we leaving school, you don't have a teacher telling you to do an assignment every day. You know, you have to be the person, if you're going to be your own boss, especially in the creative world.
Yeah.
You have to be the one that's going to decide, I'm going to do a painting every day. I'm going to write a song every day. I'm going to make these rules for myself so that I will continue to be creative. Because if you don't do that, you can just let whole months go by and you don't do anything. And so I think for us to see this as like a project or an assignment that we would have to complete is just how we like to approach creativity, you know, to just keep things fresh, to keep pushing ourselves. And so for us, it was just like, yeah, that let's attempt this. Why not?
And it seemed like something that like if I heard a band that I liked was going to attempt that, I would think that was cool. And that's a lot of how we judge like what we're going to do as a band is like, well, if I was following Pac of Vinyl, like, or just any band, like what would I think would be cool that they did? And so, you know, yeah, did that. We made a movie. We have a graphic novel now about it. Like we just kind of do things of whatever we're like, well, I think that sounds cool to me.
Yeah.
Plus we very much have a burn the boats type of mindset when it comes to our creative career. I'm like, well, if we don't do this, I don't know what we're like, I guess we'll die. Cause I don't really, there's no other option. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I love the point about sort of structured creativity and putting limits on things as a photographer. As you were talking about, if you don't put these limits, you just won't do things. There are so many projects that I've wanted to start, but because I haven't put that forced limit on myself, I've never started them. And I do think that as a photography teacher, I love putting really, really tight restrictions on my photo students and seeing what comes out of that. You just start thinking differently. So I think that that's a great point as creatives, that sometimes it helps to not be limitless in what you're going to want to do, but to really focus in and put those restrictions on yourself.
Yeah, this actually reminds me of a painting assignment that I had when I was in high school where my professor found these giant round canvases. And it was just like a big circle. I think it was like 4 feet like wide. And she just found a bunch of them and was just like, all right, your next assignment is you have to fill this. And it was one of my favorite assignments because after painting on square and rectangle strips for so long, to suddenly have to approach something from a round shape, we could do whatever we wanted, but it really opened up a new creativity in all of us to just like, how do you fill a space that's different?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a completely different mindset, completely different mindset.
I often find, and you know, probably at the school too, I don't know if you guys run into this, but I think we once heard on a podcast where some guy was like talking about lamenting how kids didn't have any creativity these days. And he like was either a substitute or something and like, you know, try to like give everybody a sheet of paper and be like, draw whatever you want. And he's like, the kids just stared at it. And he was lamenting this thing. And the two of us were thinking like, well,
you're a bad teacher.
It's way too big. Yeah. But if you're like, draw your favorite animal or draw just some kind of focus on it. Yep. That's why too, most of the Pocket Vinyl albums have some sort of theme around them. And, you know, sometimes it's a lyrical theme. Sometimes it's a more sonic theme. But I just find when I give myself that focus, it makes doing an album much easier rather than like, you know, I know a lot of songwriters just have no idea what to write about after two or three albums.
It's great too, because then when you have those rules, I think especially for me, I love to break rules. Right. And so if I give myself those rules and then suddenly I feel like this need to push against them and maybe I do break those rules, but that's OK, too, because I've still created. So I've like pushed myself to create something. Yeah. And so there's sometimes, like you'll give yourself these rules on this album and then make a song that breaks out of that. And it doesn't quite fit into those rules that you gave yourself, but you've still created a really cool song because you're pushing against some kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember we have a song called Potential from a while ago that the idea was to write it without using the sustain pedal on a piano and just to see if I could do that. And the final song, I end up using the sustain pedal, but like I broke the own rule.
It's the process of it creating and like pushing against that rule. Yeah. Right.
Or I'm going to write something in 5/4 or I'm going to write something just using the black keys on a piano or like just something like that. It rarely follows it at the end, but yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So back to the record. Mm-hmm. I have two questions. First of all, what did you start in the Northeast and then work your way west? Did you start with the easier ones and then get harder, or did you go the other way around?
That's exactly what we did. Okay. Our very first day, we actually played 3 shows in one day. We did Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, because you could just hop over the border real quick.
1 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
Those states are so small, and so then that first week we just knocked all the Northeast out of the way. Headed, I think we did like a big W through the country. Right, we started
pretty
in the Northeast.
Much, yeah.
Down, up, down, and then ended in the Pacific Northwest. Well, and ended the
and then 48, Alaska and Hawaii.
And then Alaska and Hawaii, yeah.
Okay. And how does something like that get, like, is there a third party who verifies it? Like, how does that thing work?
As we started booking the tour, we reached out to Guinness, right? And we got all of their rules that they needed.
And understandably, each record has its own set of rules.
Yes.
Sure.
Each,
And they Well, the rules were a little bit more complicated than our band was able to meet. And so a few of the examples were every space had to be a public space. We play a lot of house shows. So we do a lot of DIY spaces, places that are open to the public but aren't particularly public spaces.
They're technically on private property.
Private property.
Like,
or another one was every space had to have a capacity of 100 people. A lot of the little coffee shops and places that we play don't actually meet that. And then
there were like, I mean, we had to have tickets had to be available ahead of time. And so often we play
for donations.
Or just it's small little places that they might have a cover, but it's not like they're setting up links. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It just that doesn't happen as much for bands at our level.
But the biggest thing that really made us stop was that for every single show, we had to pay for two Guinness representatives to be at the show. We had to pay for their travel expenses, their lodging, their food, the whole thing. So we would have to bring two people with
witnesses.
Us as witnesses for the entire tour. And we often sleep on people's floors, on strangers' floors. We sleep in our car sometimes. We
rarely get a hotel.
Yeah, we don't splurge. Pay for hotels for ourselves. Our food is from the grocery stores. You know, we're not going out to eat. We're doing this at a low level so that we can continue to be creative because it's expensive. And when we hit that, when we got to that rule, we talked about it for a while. We talked to some friends. And
I think they said government officials too. So it's like
we realized with all of these things, like for example, the state of Maine, there was only in the entire state, there was only like two or three venues that actually fit these qualifications. And we would have had to make sure that they were available on the dates that we needed so that we could line up the whole thing. And so,
and the rule of thumb is usually if you send out like 10 booking emails, especially cold booking emails, like maybe you'll get one back.
Yeah.
So if there's only two or three places.
We do all of our own booking. We don't have a booking manager or anything like that. And so we ultimately decided to just do it on our own. And so we kept really good records for ourselves. But we just did. We didn't.
Guinness doesn't recognize it to this day. Yeah. But we know we did it. Everyone else who was paying attention to us knew we did it. And, you know, too, I've met a few other musicians who've done various Guinness record things, and you know, I've asked them, like, I was like, did it help your career in the long run, like having the official thing? And they're just like, nah, not really. Like, you know, you have a day, you get a cool plaque, but like that, no one really cares outside of whenever you're just doing it.
And we're like, ultimately at the end of it all, we're a very DIY band. You know, we do everything ourselves. We released a documentary. We did that all of ourselves. We've released multiple books. We've released all of our albums on our own. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just how we do things. And the community that we've built up is a lot of DIY spaces and DIY people. And that's the community that we like to be in. So we decided to just do it that way.
That's pretty great.
Frankly, I'm glad we did.
Yeah,
it makes a better story, too. And especially since we made the graphic novel about the whole record and everything.
We did get sponsorship. From
that's true,
like Rode Microphones sponsored us, which was wonderful to have, you know, some financial backing. Yeah.
If I can on that point too, I would say, because I love, so the reason Rode Microphones is like one of the biggest microphone distributors in the world, and the whole reason that happened too is because she mentioned a documentary that we made. It was on Amazon Prime for a little while. It's called Drive, Play, Sleep. It's more or less just about small, unfamous touring bands and what the lifestyle is like. A guy who worked at Rode happened to see that. The algorithm fed it to him. And he reached out and was like, hey, I'd love to sponsor you. And sent us some microphones. And then when the tour was coming along, we're like, would you guys like to sponsor? We'll put Rode on our tour posters and stuff. And he's like, yeah, sure. And they paid for the plane tickets and the roughly the gas for the tour, which was a huge expense. But I like to mention that because we're very much proponents of having your art be your best like advertisement in terms
art,
of what you're
art
doing
first.
Yeah, and like because the movie that we made, and this was a year or two after the movie was even released that this happened, because we made a thing that was good enough that a guy wanted to reach out and help us. And, you know, there's something to be said about throwing a lot of money at songs so that they become popular or whatever, or like anything. But I don't know. I'm very much a big proponent of like do good work and let that work be like the advertisement of who you are as an artist. Anyway, sorry.
I
felt like it was a good point to make given the context of
It's an excellent point to make. And it actually brings me to my last question, is sort of two-parter. How did you wind up here at Harley today? And
nepotism.
And what do you plan to present to students throughout the day?
Okay, so I told you how we're here in Western New York, we're doing a lot of libraries. So because of this, the tour that we did, we decided to make the whole story into a graphic novel. And that was published in October. And so that's the first time we've actually had an outside person come to us and tell us that they
thought like an actual publisher.
They could make money on us. so we've been going around and presenting it at libraries and at schools and bookstores and stuff like that, just to talk about the process of not only being a touring band now, but also comics and storytelling in comic form. And yeah, so Eric's cousin.
And my cousin Kelly Stevenson works here.
Yeah.
And she actually saw us play at a bookstore in Rochester back in October, shortly after the book was released. And it was, you know, talked to us and kind of was like, oh, I think you should come, you know, to my school. And then so we just last few months we've been talking about it and we're able to make it happen.
Yeah, so we're going to do a performance and then talk to the kids about just storytelling and comics and art and what it's like to be a creative person on your own.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully just as an example of being a full-time artist. Mm-hmm. It looks very different than I think what most people, you know, at least as a musician.
Oh, there's like so many different tracks and this is just one way to do it.
Right, yeah. Right. But I think just having examples. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
It wasn't until I was even a senior in high school when one of my teachers asked me if I plan on being an artist. And I was just like, that's a thing I could do. Like, you know, like it, sometimes it just takes one person to say like, look, it's possible.
Well, I don't even know if we would have done the live painting thing if we didn't have the band Cloud Cult, like mm-hmm. as an example of something too. So, yeah. And especially at a time now, like if you look at, you know, music publications and stuff, it's hard to. Like there's a lot of even huge international artists who are canceling tours because they're like, we've crunched the numbers and we're not making money. And, you know, meanwhile, Elizabeth and I are, it's a meek, financially meek, but satisfying life that we've been able to build. And, you know, like everyone else, we're just waking up every day going, I hope this continues to work.
Yeah, well, I think you guys are a great example of having something that you love to do and that you want to create and just finding a way to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you being here at school to pass along that message to our students and with me today to talk about it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today on Joy in Learning, the Harley Schools podcast. We look forward to sharing interesting stories, discussing educational topics, and exploring ideas with you in our next episode. See you again soon.